जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी, जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी, जय गोपी जन वल्लभ गिरीवर धारी, जय गोपी जन वल्लभ गिरीवर धारी, यशोद नंदन उपज जन रंजन, यशोद नंदन उपज जन रंजन, यमुना तीर वन चारी, यमुना तीर वन चारी, जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी, राधा माधव जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी, जय गोपी जन वल्लभ गिरीवर धारी, जय गोपी जन वल्लभ गिरीवर धारी, यशोद नंदन उपज जन रंजन, यशोद नंदन उपज जन रंजन, यमुना तीर वन चारी, यमुना तीर वन चारी, हरे कृष्ण हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे हरे, हरे राम 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 हरे हरे, कृष्ण हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे हरे, राम 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 हरे हरे, हरे कृष्ण हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे हरे, हरे राम 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 ハリハリハリシナハリクリシナクリシナリハリハリハリラーマハリラーマナムランハリハリジャイアプラブパダジャイアプラブPada Jaya Prabhupada Jaya Prabhupada Jaya Prabhupada Jaya Prabhupada Jaya Prabhupada Jaya Prabhupada Go to Premanandi, Hari Hari Bol. So, today we have the third canto. 46 is the verse, and 30 is the chapter. Okay? We got it there? Fine. Oh, okay. I don't know if I'll have to, but anyway, we'll see, though. Thank you. Definitely. So we're starting with the verse. Maitreya Uvacha. Et upasti amano so.Munibir Brahma Vadibi Salile Svakura Kramta Ubadatta Vita Vanamim Ubadatta Vita Vanamim Maitreya Uvacha Itupasti yamano so Munibir Brahma Vadibi Salile Svakura Kramta Upadatha Vitavanim My prayer, O Raja, it you pass to mind. Am I affecting? I didn't know that. Because I have to see the word by word.You know, the word by word, they're there. Yeah. Can we? What do I have to do? Just push this?
The devotees are still chanting.
Huh? The devotees are still chanting. Yeah, I know that. Thank you. Adib.Upasti yamano so Bir Brahma Vadibi Salile Svakura Kranta Upadatta Vitavanim Mate Uvacha Upasti yamano soMunibir Brahma Vadibi Salile Nathanam Brahma Vacha Itya Upasti Yamano So Munibir Brahma Vadibi Salile svakura kramta. A lady's prayer. Mateo uvacha. Ityupasti yamano so. Muni bir brahma vadi bir. Salile svakura kranta. Upadatthavitavanayim. Maitreya uvacha. Ityupasityamano so. Muni bir brahma vadi bir. Salile svakura kranta. Adata vakunam. We'll do the synonyms now. Is that right? Yeah? Okay. Maitreya said, iti, thus, upasyamanaha. Being praised by Aso, Lord Boar, Muni Bi, by the great sages, Brahma Vadi Bi, by the Brahma Vadi Bi, by the transcendentalists, Salile. On the water, Svakura Akrante, touched by his own hooves, Upadata, placed, Avita, the maintainer, Avanim, the earth. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. The sage Maitreya said, the Lord being thus worshipped, the Lord, being thus worshipped by all the great sages and transcendentalists, touched the earth with his hooves and placed it on the water. Please repeat. The sage Maitreya said, the Lord, being thus worshipped by all the great sages and transcendentalists, touched the earth with his hooves and placed it on the water. Purport by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. The earth was placed on the water by his inconceivable potency. His means the Lord's, capital H. The Lord is all-powerful, and therefore He can sustain the huge planets either on the water or in the air, as He likes. The tiny human brain cannot conceive how these potencies of the Lord can act. Man can give some vague explanation of the laws by which such phenomena are made possible. But actually, the tiny human brain is unable to conceive of the activities of the Lord, which are therefore called inconceivable. In other words, there's just too much to them to be able to visualize them or to even conceive them. How things are being held up in the sky and in an orbit, how things are held underwater. As we are seeing now, the object is now being held on the water. Yet the frog philosophers still try to give some imaginary explanation. So Prabhupada is referring to a little story that he generally tells with two frogs. They meet in a well, and one frog talks about an ocean, which is very, very big, much bigger than the well.
And the other frog says, well, how much bigger? Oh, much, much bigger. Well, is it like, you know, so big he gives like a number. And he says, oh, it's much bigger than that. And he gives another larger number. And he says, no, it's much bigger than that. And so the other frog, he can't conceive of it. He says, how could it be? How can there be any waterway that could be so large, so big, so great? So the other frog says, well, that's just the way it is. Until you actually see the ocean, then you'll be able to understand what is meant by that. So I'd like to backtrack a little bit for those of us who have not heard the story from the beginning. So what we have here is that my memory caught me just now. So, pardon? No, no. In the explanation here, can you come here, please? Yeah. What did you say now?
Lord Varaha.
Yeah, Lord Varaha. Okay, thank you. You can stay. Yes. What is it that has just fallen, which has to be rescued?
Huh?
The earth. Okay. Yeah, that's what I was looking for, and I got stuck on it. So what has happened is that there was a problem. The problem is that as we go back, there are two demons. One is known as Hiranyaksha and the other is known as Hiranyakashipu. And Hiranyaksha knew that the earth was very much populated with jewels. And he, being a big demon, wanting things for himself, for his own sense pleasure, his own sense gratification, his own glorification, he wanted to get those jewels. So he would have to steal them, because they were not to be given away. They were put there by the Supreme Lord. So what happened is he did just that. He stole all the jewels of the earth. So what that did is it caused the earth to become lighter, because all the jewels were now missing. Just as if you take out things from your pockets, you become a little lighter. In the same way, the earth became lighter. And as a result of the earth becoming lighter, its orbit, it had an orbit, and that orbit could not be maintained. So it would normally go in a circular form. But now that it was a different weight, and it had been programmed for that higher weight, what happened was that the earth no longer could be sustained, and so it fell. And it began falling and falling and falling until it fell into the Garbhoduk Ocean, at the bottom of the universe, and it kept falling and falling and falling until it reached the very bottom of the ocean. So, it was now gone, and there was no earth. And the Lord had established the earth, and he wanted the earth to be there, so he was a bit upset, disturbed by that happening. So Lord Brahma and some of these sages and saints from the Brahmaloka and Pitraloka and the other planetary systems, they came down and they wanted to try to figure out how they're going to fix this, how they're going to get the earth out of the ocean and bring it back up to the surface. Because it's big, it's powerful and great. So how to do that? So they were all thinking, and then Lord Brahma, he was thinking, and as he was thinking, out of one of his nostrils, a little insect-like creature came out and began going up, up, up. And as it began climbing higher and higher and higher, It got bigger and bigger and bigger, and it was the form of a hog. Now, as we know, a hog, it has tusks. And so all of the devotees who were standing around, they were seeing that this was getting bigger and bigger and bigger, and that was the means by which, when Brahma was thinking, how are we going to get the earth back, we need some means, some tool. And the tool would be this this form. So what would happen was that the earth, which was down below, would have to be brought back up. And the way it would be brought back up is by the tusks of this boar. His name is Varaha. He's an incarnation of God. And the boar would have to go down deep into the ocean and place his tusks underneath the earth. And once the tusks were underneath the earth, he would have a maintenance or a means by which he could then bring it up and bring it back to the surface of the water. And that's exactly what happened. So one may think, well, how can the earth sit on the water? So the question comes, why couldn't he sit on the water? How are all these planets sitting in the sky and not falling? By the power or the potency of the Supreme Lord, who wants that. Whatever the Lord wants, that's what happens, because he's all-powerful. He's all-knowing. And when the Lord wants that to happen, then that is what will happen. And that's exactly what did happen. So the Lord went down in the form of this boar, went down to the ocean, and got the earth on its tusks, and gradually came up to the surface of the earth, and then just put it there and just left it there. He didn't have anything else to do, because that's where it was before. Now it was back in its place, and it would be in its orbit as well. But the Lord was pretty angry at that point that this demon, Hiranyaksha, had had the audacity to go and do what he did, steal all the jewels, and not only that, but cause this fall which occurred of the earth into the water. So therefore, the first thing that the Lord would do, Varaha, he would look for Hiranyaksha, and that's what he did. And he found him on the water, not far away. And finding him there, he challenged him. Now, Hiranyaksha thought he was one of the most powerful persons in the world, and next to ordinary human beings, he was. And his brother was just as powerful. And so they were fearless. They weren't afraid of anyone. So they felt, because they could defeat anyone, and they had been doing that, defeating so many different people and acquiring more and more wealth and power and prestige and force and influence. So that's exactly what happened. And so the Lord, he challenged this Hiranyaksha. He said, how dare you do what you did? Why did you do that? And Hiranyaksha said, who are you to ask me why I did this, why I did not? He acted very tough. So immediately a fight began, but it didn't last long, because the Lord was so steamed up that he took his palm and he just slapped him on the ear. That was it. He killed him instantly. It wasn't even a fight. So that shows you the power, or the potency, or the glory of the Supreme Lord, what he can do. The most powerful demon that was in existence, he was able to kill in just a few seconds. And his brother, Hiranyakashipu, a little later on, he gets killed fairly quickly as well. So this is a very important point that we have to understand. The thing that's being made, or the point that's being made throughout this chapter, is the greatness of God, the glory of God, the wonder of God, that we should not think we are God. This is a tendency of all human beings to think that I'm powerful, I'm great, I'm glorious, I'm wonderful, I'm above people, I have more money, you know, more wealth, more power, influence. So when we begin to think in those terms, what happens is that we become very proud, we become very puffed up, and we begin to think that we're the greatest, that we can't be defeated. All these thoughts come to us, and the result of that is that we find ourselves defeated because we were thinking that there is no one as great as us, but as we see in this particular story, the Lord is inconceivably great, and he's able to defeat anyone and smash or destroy anything. There is no end, no beginning, no middle. The Lord is infinite, actually. And so, therefore, when ordinary human beings try to compare themselves, you know, to the Lord, it's foolishness. And that's what is said over here. The tiny human brain cannot conceive how these potencies of the Lord can act. Man can give some vague explanation of the Lord's by which such phenomena are made possible. But actually, the tiny human brain is unable to conceive of the activities of the Lord. The Lord's activities are inconceivable. How are all these planets hanging, staying, remaining in the sky and moving in a programmed orbit? How is that happening? By the will of the Lord. So our will and God's will are not the same in extent, in degree, and in power. We are very tiny. And this is actually a great story to try to help, not to try, but to help us become more humble and realize that as big, as great, as wonderful as we may see ourselves to be, next to Krishna, we are just like ants. We have no potency. We have no power. We have nothing. Next to another human being, maybe you do, but what does that matter? There's always Krishna, and he can let us live or he can kill us. He can do anything he wants with us. And when we understand that and we keep this in mind, we have the proper respect for the Lord wherever we are. When we're walking in the street, we see the great sun that is up in the sky that is being maintained. The power of the sun is being maintained by God. And we see all the different planets. And we see clouds being made. We see rain being made. We see snow being made. All these things are the products of Krishna's will, his desire, his interests. He wants something to happen, and he makes it happen. If we want something to happen, it may happen by our efforts, and it may not. And if it's too vast, too difficult, we can't make planets. What to speak of setting them to move in orbits. We can't do that. We don't have that power. We don't have that knowledge. We don't have that understanding. However, the interesting or ironic aspect of that is that if Krishna wants us to have it, there's nothing to stop us from having it. Just like Brahma. How does Brahma create the universe? He does it by the knowledge that is given to him by the Supreme Lord. Not only does he get the knowledge, but he knows how to use the knowledge. And in knowing how to use the knowledge, what happens is that we begin to see the greatness of God as it's manifesting, as it's showing through Lord Brahma. And so this is a very important principle idea that as is said in this particular chapter. The principle is God is great, God is wonderful, God is glorious, God is amazing, and that's a principle that we all have to have. Because when we have that principle foremost in the foreground of our mind, we stop thinking that we're great, we're wonderful, we're glorious, we're this, we're that. And that cuts away the false pride that we often have. And the false pride, if it's not overcome by humility, realizing that whatever we have, where does it come from? It comes from the Supreme Lord. Our greatness, our astonishingness, our abilities, all these things come from whom? They come from the Supreme Lord. And when we know that, when we realize that, when we acknowledge that, recognize it, then the principle or the idea of being proud, what are you going to be proud of? When you see how great God is, where is my pride? Nothing. I'm an ant. But if I forget that I'm an ant and I start thinking that I'm a great, great, wonderful, glorious person, then I begin to think I'm better than this person or better than that person, better than this person. And as a result of that, that can result in difficulties, problems, fights. Why fights? Because if I think I'm better than you and you think you're better than I, then it may result in an argument that results further in blows being thrown to one another, and ultimately so many things, as we read in the here on the TV or the radio every day, so many people are being shot, gunned down. It's like a regular, it's like a pastime now. Yeah, people go into a place and they just see some people there and they shoot them for fun. Or they may have something against that particular individual. And so they do it for that reason. Where does all that hatred come from? That hatred comes from wanting to be better and bigger and greater than others. And all of us come into this world of wanting to be the Lord in some degree. Some in a large degree. And we generally refer to these people as bullies. You know, they're always picking on somebody. So that desire, a person wants to be a better dressed person, have better clothing than another person. One girl, she may see, she has a dress, it looks beautiful, but is it as nice as the one I just bought on last Saturday? And then she goes home and compare. So wanting to be better and bigger and greater and glorious. Why? Because, as I said from the very beginning, when we all want to be the Lord, we want to be all-important, all-powerful, all-maniacal, because that's what it is. If you want to be all those things, eventually you're going to find someone who's better than you, who's greater than you, who's more wonderful than you or me. And when that happens, we feel crushed. We feel small. We feel insignificant. We feel worthless. And the result of that feeling of worthlessness is that we get depressed. Oh, I thought I was the best. I thought I was the greatest. I thought I was wonderful. And look, he put me to shame. Or her dress put my dress to shame. How could this happen? So when we put all our stock and our material acquirements or material aggrandizement, the result of that is that at somewhere along the line, we're going to find we're not as great, as wonderful, as marvelous as we thought. And when we can think of ourselves as being insignificant, like Haridas Thakur, he was the greatest of the greatest. He was very much favored by Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. But Haridas Thakur considered himself insignificant. He considered himself of no value, of no worth. And yet he was so amazing. So by having that attitude, he was never affronted. He was never insulted. He was never upset. Why was he not upset? Because he never thought of himself as something that he wasn't. He thought of himself as simply a human being who had some qualities, and he used them in the loving service of Krishna. And this is what we all, you know, have to be striving for. Krishna has blessed me. Krishna has given me some grace. Grace is a getting a gift that we don't deserve, but you got it anyway. And it's because Krishna was very much appreciative of some of the things that we did. And as a result of our having done those things and pleased Krishna, the way he reciprocates is that what he does is he gives us favor. He gives us grace. He gives us things that we may need or not need. And if we have any degree of smarts, we say, why did God do this to me? I've done so many wrong things, so many problem things. I've hurt so many people. And yet, look at all these gifts I'm still getting. Because the Lord has remembered all the good things, the wonderful things, the pleasing things that we did for him. And he wants to also show and reciprocate his love in this manner. So although he always knows the wrong or the bad and the good and the great of what we've done, but he measures things according to what he feels we should have. And that's what God is. He knows what we need. So if we don't get something that we want at a particular time and place, we have to also ask ourselves, is it that maybe the Lord doesn't want me to have this now? Maybe it would hurt me. Maybe it would harm me. Maybe it would get me in trouble or in difficulty. Is it possible? So when we take a reasonable attitude towards all the things that are happening to us, either those which are painful or pleasurable, that all these are coming by the grace of God, and I'm getting them by the grace of God, because why? He loves me. And the love that he's giving me is coming in these different gifts which I'm receiving. So this is a wonderful attitude to have, that we can be walking along the street and the sun is shining. This is God's mercy. The breeze is blowing. This is God's mercy. The sun is shining. This is God's mercy. I'm eating today. This is God's mercy. Do we thank the Lord? My Lord, please thank you for the food and clothing and shelter and health, strength and guidance and protection and direction and all the things that you're giving me. Do I do that? Or do I just take it for granted because I think I'm so great, so wonderful, so marvelous that I should get that and even more? That's pride to the max, and it leads to much pain, disgust, and sometimes unconsciousness, depending upon where you are and what you're doing. So this is the all-important point that I wanted to make, that we can all become great by trying to be tiny and small. Isn't Jesus said, he who wants to be first will be last, and he who wants to be, or she who wants to be last, will become first. Meaning that the persons who are truly and genuinely and sincerely humble, not just putting on a show, but really humble, because that's the way they feel. They like to glorify others. They like to do things for others. They like to appreciate the things of others. And by developing those wonderful habits, we manifest them in our daily relationships. And in so doing, what happens? We become very likable. And likable because we like doing things for others. We want others to be blessed. Not only me, which is selfishness. Selflessness means that I want others to receive benefits and glories and goodness. So I'll end the class here. I used to go way over, but as I get older, I have less to say. I see I'm less than what I once perhaps thought I was. So are there any comments or any questions that anyone would like to... yes. First of all, what is your name? And are you a member? Do you come to this temple regularly? Because I don't know you.
Semi-regularly, but...
Okay.
I've been coming here for a
while. Okay, good. Because I don't know you, and I usually call people by their names.
I've seen you many times.
Okay. Go ahead with your question or comment.
It's a question. I was just curious. I just came in on this first, so I haven't heard the previous verses, But I'm just curious, in what form is the Lord? In other words, you were referring to these two demons in their form, and you were referring to the pig that lifted the earth and everything. But what, in what form was the Lord when in this verse?
In what form was the boar? Is that
the Lord? The Lord, Krishna.
The Lord.
In what form?
He was in the form of the boar. When I mentioned in the story that a little insect-like creature came out of the nostril of Lord Brahma, that was the Lord. And he was not just staying small, but he was growing as he went higher and higher. He got bigger and bigger until he got big enough to be able to go into the ocean with the tusks and raise the ocean, raise the earth back to its position.
Okay, but at the point where he slapped the
demon?
Yes. At that time, what form was he in?
The same. Yeah.
A boar?
Yeah, he was still in the boar form.
Really?
Yes.
Interesting. Okay, that's good to know. Thank you very much.
That in itself was enough to knock the guy out. So to see a boar.
Yeah, because when he hit him, it was with a hoof. And in the
tail too.
What?
A tail too.
A tail.
A tail. The boar has a tail. Okay.
Okay, but also in the verse. When there was the hoofs, in other words, he was referring to the boar. What did he do at that point in the beginning?
Well, the purpose of the form primarily was that it would firstly be perfect for raising the earth with the tusks, and those tusks would be gigantic. And because the earth is gigantic, so he has to get under the earth, raise it, and set it there, and then put the potency of flotation in it, which it did. It didn't sink back down again.
Right.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay,
Anyone else have a question? No? Nobody? You going to let me off easy today? Okay, thank you all very much. It's been a pleasure sharing this with you. I'm sorry. I haven't spoken in 2 years, so I apologize for not speaking as I once did. But perhaps after another 2 years, maybe we'll get back to that. Hare Krishna. Thank you. Thank you.